Today's show is being brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, believers in good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world, but there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from. A curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. No matter how much you choose to give, you'll feel awesome next time you tune in, knowing that we wouldn't be here without you. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Plus, we have great member swag. Show off your HRN pride with a t-shirt or keep your hands safe in the kitchen with an HRN potholder. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from roughly 12 to roughly 12:45 from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Not joined, as usual, with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez because she has family obligations to attend to. We do have my man Dave in the booth. How you doing?
Doing good. How about you?
Doing well. And special guest... Special guest host today, Jack Schramm. Jack Schramm, formerly the head bartender of Booker & Dax, future head bartender of the as-yet-unnamed, as-yet-unannounced bar that we will be starting sooner rather than later. Isn't that our hope, Jack?
I think you just announced it.
Well,
everybody knows there's going to be a bar. It's just what, where, when, how.
Also, some of you who came to Booker & Dax and had some of Jack's fine drinks may not know this. Formerly worked at Milk Bar, can answer all of your Milk Bar questions. Formerly was a food studies person at NYU. So when he went home on breaks, what do you study, son? I study food! Food, Ma! Right?
No, Ma was very supportive. Everyone was supportive. Yeah? They're food humans.
Yeah?
So nice. Care about what they eat.
You didn't have
think
to.
Think about it a lot. No, there was no... No need to explain. I worked at a butcher in high school. Like it made sense.
All right.
It was a logical move.
What kind of butcher was it?
Just a small family owned. It was like 100 years old in the community in Alamo, California.
Where the heck is Alamo, California?
East Bay, the just like 40 minutes east of San Francisco in the not very exciting part of the Bay Area.
Remember the Alamo.
Exactly.
That's a different Alamo.
Different. Very different.
Thanks, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it may be Alamo, the car rental place, is from where you were working.
I doubt it.
Is that from Alamo, Texas?
I would assume so.
All right. Yeah. Hey, interesting fact. Mm-hmm. So I think I told Jack this, and some people have heard this. My stepfather's father, who died this year in his mid-90s, was a butcher for many years, and his father actually started the butcher. Came over from Italy. In 1906 or whatever, started the, worked for a couple of years, started a butcher shop in the North End. And when he died, I got, his butcher knives and I just hung it up his scale.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't have a picture of it. Yeah. Check out this. It's 1912 patent, so you know it's before like 1924. So it was like early on in their shop and stayed in their shop the entire time they were open. And it was made in Boston, which is where their shop was. Carr and Chadwick. Carr and Chadwick Butcher Scales. It's still got the legal, it's still got like the inspection sticker, the legal for use tag on it. And it's an old spring scale. Oh, it's pretty sweet.
Does it still function?
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Craftsmanship.
But here's the thing, right? It hung low in the butcher shop. Mm-hmm. So the top of it was impeccable, like clean, impeccable.
Yeah, because people could see over the counter.
Underneath, right? Mm-hmm. It had like where the two, because it's a hanging scale. It's an old school hanging scale. And where the two rods go down to hold the platform onto the spring weight thing, like decades of like lamb grease had oozed over, and there was like this, like, you know, like these dams of lamb grease underneath. That's pretty sweet.
There's no dirty floor like the areas of a butcher that customers can't see. it's terrifying, the things that you'll find.
Decades
of animal, just raw animal buildup.
Well, I mean, it solidifies over time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But still, you know, it's like layers of sedimentary rock.
Yeah.
But made of animals.
And it has a texture of like asphalt.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, you know, some thick,
fully gooey, firm.
Fully firm. Nice. I like that. I'm going to use that in my next band.
Great.
Yeah, that'll be the title of the episode. Thanks.
Fully firm?
Yep.
Nice. And we're not even talking about pectin methylesterase, which is something I wanted to use at the bar. Oh, by the way, call in all your questions. I said this before, but call in all your questions to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. Or you can send them on into the chat room. But Jack Schramm has all of the Booker and Dax specs that I do not. So, for instance, he actually sent them to me, but I can never find them fast enough. But probably in his head, he still has most of them. So all of you, you know, who are like, how do you make the thunder nut? I'm like, well, I know roughly how it works, but I don't know the actual specs. And so we can, you know, Jack here,
it's been over a year, but I've still got them all pretty good.
Yeah, so Blopins asked me for one when he sent me those beers to spin out, and I never sent the specs to him because I don't know. I just don't know some of these specs. Like, unless it's my actual personal spec, I didn't have to make it on a day-in, day-out basis, and so I just don't know it. But Jack does, so call in all of your spec. And we're still going to do that a Booker and Dax reunion. We should do it maybe, like as we're about to open, do a Booker and Dax reunion special.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Here.
I know everybody would be super into it.
Yeah, it's before shift, so people can come in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So any news in the world of foods and or drinks, Jack, that you can think of?
Not in the broader world of food. I feel like what's exciting right now? Is anything...
Everything and nothing. Yeah. Life is always exciting. As long as you're learning, everything's exciting. Yeah. What about you, Dave? You have any cooking issues over the weekend before I get into these?
I made beef stew in the slow cooker. Nothing remarkable.
What kind of slow cooker do you own?
It is... Oh, God, I'm blanking on the name, of course, now.
What style? Are you an Instapot person?
Well, it is... Oh, wait, it is an Instapot. Yeah.
All right.
So it's like combo slow cooker, pressure cooker. It's great.
So you're part of the Instapot revolution, are you?
I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's a genius move. I mean, like, for years, I was saying, why don't they combine all this crap? And then, but I'm too stupid. Instead, I'm building, like, torch attachments and
spinzalls
and all this other stuff.
The jetties.
I never built a Vegetti.
Oh, you just like to talk about it.
I love to jam things into Vegettis.
Well, who doesn't?
Yes. I like to jam. You know, when I have a carrot, I like to jam my carrot into a Vegetti.
Obviously, that's what the Vegetti is for.
That's what the Vegetti is for.
Accepting carrots.
That was maybe one of our all-time greatest running gags, was people calling in Vegetti stuff. Anyway, so how was your beef stew?
Oh, it was delicious.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so my problem with pressure-cooked beef stews in general, and pressure cooker in general is fantastic for a lot of things, and you should get the Hit Pressure Cooker book and all this, but the issue with it is, remember that in a pressure cooker, there is not a lot of reduction. So when you're throwing meats into a pressure cooker and cooking them a la stew style, they tend to be very liquidy when you pull them out. Like, let's say you're doing a chili or something like this. And so you need to adjust your liquid levels going in. But if you adjust your liquid levels too low, you scorch. you scorch, which is no good. So in general, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll try to hover that level right around where it's going to scorch. And I, if you had like a maybe your Instapot never scorches, maybe it's like good at that, or like, you know, I use the Breville now. What's it called? Like the what's that Breville, the Breville called? Like it's called like the Temperature Freak. It's literally called, I think, the Temperature Freak or something like this, or the Precision Freak. I think it has the word freak in it.
Did they understand that you were their target market when they named it?
I think so, because they sent me one for free.
There you go.
You know, but like, is it called it? Dave, look that up. Is it Temperature Freak? Something like this. I don't know.
Yeah, give me a minute.
But so with that, you know, you're not going to scorch your product because it's never going to overshoot too much. And I guess, you know, I haven't a lot of, you know, work with like the Cuisinarts and stuff like this in terms of scorch. I mean, really, when you have a pressure cooker, the advantage, my problem, in fact, I shouldn't say it. My mom doesn't listen to this, so it's fine. So my brother-in-law was like, so should we get this Instapot? It's only 1,000 watts. He doesn't talk like that. We should only get like 1,000 watts for your mom because, you know, I thought maybe we'd get her one of these things. And I was like, 1,000 watts is kind of weak, right? Because my problem with these electric pressure cookers is that you're going to want to brown your crap before you cook it in a stew form. Dave, yeah, did you brown your crap before you did your stew?
No, I did not.
Jesus, why? Were you following some sort of dump meal? What, you pour freaking Dr. Pepper in the damn thing beforehand?
I mean, it essentially was like a dump meal, I guess. Yeah, I've done this before. It slow cooks for 12 hours, so it doesn't need browning.
What?
Doesn't need browning?
Oh, God, here we go.
What liquid did you pour in?
I used a combination of A1 and water. I told you this is nothing remarkable. It's just, oh, for God's sake.
Jesus.
What's the point of being alive without the Maillard reaction?
Don't shame me for my slow cooking.
I'm not shaming you for your slow cooking. Well, slow cooking, by the way, is different from pressure cooking. And slow cooking, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Slow cooking is
we definitely brown stuff before pressure cooking.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're doing is you're faking those things with the A1. You're using, what is A1 anyway? Is A1 Worcestershire sauce plus ketchup plus water plus vinegar? What is it? What is A1?
Sounds about right, but yeah.
By the way, Worcestershire sauce, fantastic.
Delicious the best. Product. Yeah, absolutely.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it's the Breville Control Freak Smart Induction Cooker.
Control Freak.
Yeah.
Control Freak.
And it runs $1,800 at William-Sonoma, sorry.
So it does contain the word freak.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Control Freak.
Freak. Mm. Anyway, it's a good unit. It's a great unit. I like it. You know what I saw? Did you saw that? The induction, I want induction to take over. Like, I want it to take over. Like, you know, everyone's like, my pot doesn't work. Really? Your pot doesn't work? You're like, how many pots? Like, of the pots that I already owned before I had ever owned an induction, over half of them work on an induction unit. And the other half can be, like, you know, wiggled around.
Yeah.
The main ones that don't work is if you own any big, like, inexpensive aluminum pots, like turkey fryers, which I do, obviously. You know what I mean? Anyway.
Yeah.
Point being, like, IKEA now sells an induction unit for like $20. Back to what I was saying on the slow cooker. So the Instapot's only 1,000 watts, and the problem is that if you're not an enemy of quality, Dave, you're gonna want to brown your meats before they go in. Or like, let's say did you put any onions into this stew?
Yeah.
Okay, thank Christ. You put some onions into this stew now.
Living in a society, you know.
Right. Did you at least sweat the freaking onions?
No.
Okay, so if you were going to do any such things like sweating your onions or browning your meat.
I need Nastasia here to back me up today. Where is she?
Family obligations. So, like, my point is that 1,000 watts is a little low for browning meats. It's just a little sluggish for browning meats. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing relatively large things, it takes a while for 1,000 watts to heat your stuff up. Now, if you're slow cooking, who gives a crap? It's not, you know, who gives a crap?
I'm slow cooking.
You're slow cooking.
Yeah. So who gives a crap?
Even as a rice cooker, really, who gives a crap? Unless you're making a boat ton of rice, it's just really not that much of a load. And the amount of time it takes, and the amount of time it takes to get up to that. Like, have we spoken about the Limbomaniacs on the show before? The song?
I don't think so.
Toilets flooded, the load won't fit. Anyway, the terrible song. Terrible song. But really good musicians. You know, that's one of those Limbomaniacs. Limbomaniacs was one of those groups that had a lot of good musicians with terrible lyric ideas. Just terrible ideas. Terrible songs. You know, bad vocalization.
Kind of like U2.
Great live, yeah.
I never saw them like that. Would you say kind of like U2?
Yeah.
You two, all I can think about with you two is like, they lost me when they lost the Ninga Ninga Ninga. Like, I'm a big fan of you two back in the Ninga Ninga Ninga.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You mean like all jangly sounding?
Yeah, the greatest guitar pedalist.
Sure, sure.
Ninga 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 Ninga. That's like when you two, when you hear that Ninga Ninga Ninga, you're like, oh, yeah, you two.
Oh, yeah, the streets don't have a name.
Yeah, I mean, then like, you know, I'm still with them in the day two. I'm fine with that, like later on, but like this newer stuff, it's not my. It's not my cup of tea. It's not, I'm not with them anymore. Anyway,
lines are being drawn.
So back to this Instapot thing. I think 1,000 watts is what I would love to see is a 1,500 watt induction cooker Instapot. So like, you know, like my Zoji Rushi rice maker, which is like very high high wattage induction unit. I saw one, by the way. I think I mentioned this on the air. When I went to China, I realized how far behind we are in rice cooker technology, because I thought I had a really nice rice cooker, and I have the nicest rice cooker that the average person could buy here in the U.S. I got it as a gift. I didn't spend my own money. But I picked up this one in China, and I was like, God damn, this is a nice rice cooker. I was like, holy crap. I picked up the rice pot, and I was like, I would be proud to own this pot. Like this, just the insert pot. I was like, this is nice.
High quality.
High quality.
It's a Rolls Rice.
Oh, oh, by the way, man. Jack, one of our head punsters, and we'll talk about puns and names.
Do I need to cue up the rim shot?
Oh. I don't know, dude.
Give me a minute.
I would appreciate it if you did.
So I asked the guy, I was like, how much does this cost? He's like, that's $1,000. I was like, ooh. I was like, you know what? It feels like $1,000. I guess if I was going to get married again and I ate rice every day and everyone was in that wedding spending mood, I'd be like, get me this.
Like this rice cooker.
I want this $1,000 rice cooker. You know what I mean? Because I would use that rice cooker at least 1/30th as much as a car. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And a car is like $30,000.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know. Good point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you can't drive, you know. You can't, you know, I guess you can use your car as a cooking implement. There's several books written on this, on using your...
Like the tailpipe?
No, usually the engine block.
Oh, that makes more sense.
But most of the stuff was written for relatively older vehicles. I don't know if they ever did a motorcycle follow-up, because first of all, like, you know, where the heat on your motorcycle is really dependent on how the engine layout works. But I think they expected you to have some sort of, like, you know, straight six or something like, I don't know what the heck they were expecting you to cook on, but they have a bunch of recipes that all, you know, boil down to wrap your crap in aluminum foil, strap it on, you know, to your engine block, or I think just like kind of jam it into the top, into like the valve cover area, and then just drive until it's done. So it's mainly items that you're not worried about overcooking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I would never attempt, but in a pinch.
Well, I mean,
post-apocalyptic.
You would never attempt it. If you were driving from like San Francisco to like Yosemite or up the Sierras, you would never be like, you know what? Why not?
I'm gonna save some time at the campsite.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, did I tell you that? I'm not gonna get into it. Like when the last time I was over there, I had a picnic at where the Donner Pass was, and literally a picnic.
Yeah,
where the people were, you know, eating the people, and it was all I could talk about. My wife was like, I was like, A, that's disrespectful, and B, like, what the hell? That's gross. I'm trying to eat. We're talking about people eating people, and I'm like, yeah, but we're eating our picnic where the people ate the people. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I couldn't get around it.
We're far enough removed that Donner Party jokes, I think they're okay at this point.
Not too soon.
What about the people from that plane alive in Chile where they crashed and the people ate the people? They're still alive, those people who ate the people. The people who got eaten were not alive anymore.
Don't make the jokes to the people that ate the people.
Don't make the people that ate the people.
Yeah.
All right, anyway. Oh, you got the rim shot up. So anyway, back to the Instapot. I would love to see an Instapot like that. And also, you know, you were saying before, Dave, enemy of quality. I'd like to make a distinction so that everybody knows. We are all, this is the difference between a low-quality individual and an enemy of quality. We are all low-quality individuals because we are all fallible. We are all weak. We are all low-quality individuals. right? The enemy of quality. We aspire to be better quality than we are.
Absolutely.
And that's what makes us redeemable low quality individuals as opposed to, you know, non-redeemable, right?
Absolutely.
And that's the whole thing. We are I feel we are worthy of making ourselves better, and therefore we're okay. But right, and in fact, as I've said many times, as everybody knows, if you don't have a little bit of, you know, of self-loathing, how are you going to get better?
Absolutely. You need to have that drive to improve.
Right, all the time. If you think you're like, "Oh, I'm great. I'm so efficient. Everything I do is awesome." You're useless. It means everything you do is garbage.
You're done for. You'll never get better, and
you're horrible at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anyway. Not my point. But going ahead.
You want to take a goal?
But an enemy of quality.
Oh, I thought you were done.
An enemy of quality, as opposed to a low-quality individual, is someone who actively works against quality, a.k.a. Satan, the devil, enemy of quality.
So making the choice to not get better and to not improve systems.
Yeah, and actively ruining things.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm not sure where I come down on pre-Browning, but we'll get into it. Anyway, so we have a caller, Dave?
Yeah.
All right, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Dave.
How you doing?
Comment about the Instant Pot discussion and the beef stew thing, just since y'all were on it for so long while I was on hold.
Sorry.
The Instant Pot, no, it's all right. I'm a big fan of the Instant Pot, as many people are. I was really surprised at how nice the liner in that is. I sometimes will take that out and use it on the stovetop, and in fact, that's my big, because the power on it's not super great, like you were saying, you can get things jump-started on the stovetop with the liner and then move the hot pot liner to the Instant Pot. So you can do all your searing over a high BTU burner and then move it, you know, to the Instant Pot proper, and then it'll get up to pressure really quickly.
Oh, that's an excellent point because, I can't do that, for instance, with my rice cooker insert or with the Cuisinart insert because they're Teflon-coated and they're not rated for that kind of stuff. But from my reading, the Instant Pot is an uncoated stainless insert, and so it shouldn't care what the hell you do to it, right?
Yeah, and the cladding on the bottom is actually pretty thick, so it does a relatively good job. The only complaint is that it's sort of narrow, just because it's a liner pot, so it's not really gonna evaporate off a whole lot. But it's quality. I mean, it's for. I think 65 on Prime Day for an Instant Pot.
Nice. Well, that's a really good tip, actually. Like, I didn't think about you because, like, I'm so used to those inserts not being either being so thin that you wouldn't, like, it would scorch like a mother if you put it onto a burner, or B, not being rated for it. Like, I would never put my rice cooker bowl on a burner. That's a good tip. And are you like me when you do that? Like, what I typically will do is I always do meats in batches and then throw them in the bowl, then throw the liquid drip off back into the thing to evaporate a little before I dump in, just so I don't water everything down too much. You follow the same kind of protocol when you're doing the pre-brown?
Yeah, I do the same thing. Sometimes I'll even, I'll get a couple of Dutch ovens going and then move it all just because it'll take you an hour to properly brown everything separately. But then if you have a couple of big things on the stove, you can just get your mirepoix off. You can do your meat in batches. More cleanup, but faster. So
It'd be nice if someone figured out something, because it's just a multiple pot cleanup thing. And we'll talk about this if there's time later. I attempted to try a new cleaning technology over the weekend.
Ooh.
Unsuccessfully.
Oh.
So, and while I have you on the air, before we go to the question that you're going to talk about, what are your thoughts on not pre-browning or pre-sweating your alliums?
The alliums in particular?
Either one. Just so your thoughts.
I don't know. I always brown it off beforehand, but I very rarely – I'm always going for the darkest – jus, the darkest gravy, the most Maillard-y, roasty thing. And that's the thing, is that if you're not doing a conventional braise and you don't get that evaporation, you're not getting that browning on top that you would normally get, even if you didn't sear it off. Like if you're doing an oven braise with the lid off or something like that. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be doing it in a closed environment that's wet, I would always sear off first, because there's higher...
Yeah.
Higher temp Maillard products, you're not going to get
So I'm going to go ahead and say that you're on the side that's over here. You're not on the side of the booth on that.
Wait, can we just clarify? does the browning need to happen for both slow cooking and pressure cooking, you're saying, or just pressure cooking?
I'm really both, but the thing is that you're cooking for so long with a slow cooker
right.
that it's going to kind of happen.
Right, right.
You know what this sounds like, people?
But when you start stuff with the sear at the beginning, all those flavor compounds also develop over the course of the 12-hour cook time.
Right, and as I said, we do brown before pressure cooking.
Okay, listen.
No
listen.
Further questions.
Cooking issues challenge. Someone take this up. Someone take this up. Do it. Two identical pots, two identical recipes, one pre-brown, one don't. Cook 12 hours. Report back. Someone out there
chat room.
Has the energy to do this.
Step up, chat room.
Someone step up and help us out. Call in. We'll give you like 5-6 minutes of reporting time on cooking issues to report your findings. You call in. You let us know whether or not there was a big difference. Now, if you're really a high-quality individual, you will, or not as low-quality as you might otherwise be, you'll do a triangle test with people so they can see if they can tell it apart. But okay, so if anyone wants to do it, like, I'll give you even more time and more kudos if you do the triangle test. Maybe we'll give you some sort of a prize. Like maybe we'll give you a Heritage Radio Network Food Radio Since 2009 t-shirt. I don't know. I'm not saying we will because I don't have the power to do that. But maybe. Anyway, so now what's your question?
Oh, one final thing on the Instant Pot, just to be real quick. I was actually really surprised looking at their little recipe book that came with it, how friendly to quality they are. In their beef stew recipe, it's brown everything off first, and then there's after you've cooked the meat, then you strain out the mirepoix and get the stock back to normal and add, like, vegetables in stages. Huh. And it's very built, very linear, very clean, and it's, it follows best practices, which is kind of weird in this appliance, which is sort of sold as like a, you know, it's an 8-in-1 wonder thing, and all you have to do is press a button and walk away, but then you look at the recipes, and they're like, well, if you were a decent human being and you gave a damn, this is how you would actually do it.
Huh, well, I like to hear stuff like that. Maybe the people who make it are cooks. I don't know who makes it, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like good people, though.
God bless them. You know, first of all, like anyone that like advances quality in a non-judgmental way, unlike what I was doing to Dave, I like that. So judgy. Mm. Yeah, look, we're among friends. You can be judgy among friends, I think. Anyway, what was your question?
Okay, so here's my question. I got a quarter boneless Suriano ham coming from S. Wallace Edwards.
Whoa, stop. Is he selling them again, or is this old stock?
They are back in stock. The bone-in just sold out. They've got some boneless quarters and fully boned-out ones available, but they're going fast.
Let me interrupt you for one second. S. Wallace Edwards, who is a longtime supporter of the radio network here.
Love him.
I've known him for many, many, many years, since, I don't know, like 2004 or something like this, is one of the finest ham producers in the Surrey area of Virginia, Tidewater, Virginia. Family's been doing it for eight bazillion years. His grandfather wrote an article in the 60s about how ham was going to hell in a handbasket because they got rid of peanut feed. Oh, the whole nine. The guy, real deal guy, S. Wallace Edwards. Anyways, a couple of years ago, his establishment burnt to the ground. There were wild dogs running on his property eating scorched hams, and we all cried bitter tears because his high-end ham, which he called Suriano. I dislike that name intensely, but it's a very good product, and I'm happy to see that it's back. All right, now go ahead.
And also just had to, go get it. Because it's going to be gone if you want some to anybody listening.
Really high quality ham, really beautiful. Nothing brings the salt or the funk like Edwards.
Yeah, how old are they right now? Are they full 12?
I think they're saying 400 days.
400 days? Nice. Yeah. All right, that's good. That's good cutting age, good cutting time. All right, so go ahead.
And so the only time I've ever had this ham was on my one visit to Booker and Dax.
Oh, yeah. Did you get the tasting or just the Edwards?
It was like a one kind of random night that I happened to be in New York City, like unexpectedly my flight got canceled. And someone said, is there anywhere you want to go? So I went there, got the ham plate, and the pork buns because we had dinner reservations afterwards.
So did you do it? Did you put a slice of ham? Did you tuck it into the pork bun? Because that was always, that's
no, we didn't
definitely
have
the move.
Same time, but that was,
that's a turbo bun.
Really?
Yes.
The new place, by the way, will not have buns. One thing it will not have is pork buns. Because, to be honest with you, like, there was a guy named Sinido who was the original pork bun maker at Booker and Dax, and prior to Booker and Dax, just at Sambar. And he would, this is how he operated. He always had the same pleasant look on his face 100% of the time, and it was air went in, buns came out. Air goes in, buns go out. I love
that guy.
Remarkable
stuff. Just a feat of endurance and strength and
every bun
stamina.
Every bun perfect. No,
spectacular.
Like, no dry edges.
Oh, no. Just a perfect layer of hoisin. Just, oh, it's beautiful.
No misplaced cucumber slices.
No, absolutely not.
Every, like, when you looked at his station, mm-hmm. people would order, like, 8 billion buns, please. And, like, they would all look like perfect, like you would, mm-hmm. like, decapitate or cut Kermit the Frog right through the mouth open, because that's how he would lay them out. You know what I mean? And oh my God.
And he maintained the steam level in his bun basket perfectly. They're always so pillowy soft.
Yeah. It's
never
true.
Soggy, never dry or cold.
Sinido was a good man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's not dead. He just went to go work somewhere else.
Yeah.
For more money. Anyway, I didn't say that, but I did. Okay, so you have this, you have a quarter of us, which quarter of the ham do you have?
I don't know yet. It's coming in the mail later, but it's boned out. And I guess my question is, you know, do you have any serving suggestions? I mean, I would just put it on the plate and eat it.
Correct,
but, like,
yes.
Pairing suggestions or, I mean, I was thinking about doing the sort of espresso powder, red eye gravy in air quotes that, like, the Momofuku group. You guys did.
To me, that is the best thing they ever came up with.
Other pairing type thing.
Delicious product.
Yeah, I love that product. And so, like, I'm going to go ahead and say that, you know, of all the things that crew ever came up with, that red eye gravy mayonnaise is maybe the best one. I love that stuff. I think it's somewhat polarizing. Some people don't like it, right? Bad people.
I've never met anyone that doesn't like it.
Right. If you didn't know what was going to happen beforehand, mm-hmm. first of all,
yeah.
like, red eye gravy, I mean, I grew up with it because my grandma used mm-hmm. to make actual red eye gravy with coffee and, you know, and the drippings and stuff. But so I have a particular soft spot for it in general. That stuff is delicious. But I will tell you what you can do. You know, the old joke is, you know, a couple and a Virginia ham is the definition of forever because it lasts forever. You know, but don't cook it. Whatever you do, don't cook it. Right. I mean, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can. But you should not. So what I like to do is when God invented the American country ham, he really wanted you to eat it with eggs. You know what I'm saying? So like raw like let's say you're gonna make a pizza. You fire up a pizza and then you do like a fried egg on top, and then after it comes out of the oven, you put some thin slices of this over top of that. That is delicious. Or even like you take scrambled eggs and you cut some up thin and put it over the scrambled eggs after it cooks. That stuff's delicious. I just eat it straight. On sandwiches, it's good. And cheese plates, it's good. I mean, anything that it would be good, anything that you would use a prosciutto style thing for, you could use it here. But I particularly love it with eggs. And so because I like eggs more than the average person, when I cook for myself, when I'm alone, which doesn't happen hardly ever anymore, when I'm alone, all I consume is eggs. And so, like, you know, poached eggs, fried eggs, scrambled eggs, on toast. And if I have country ham, there's country ham all over up and down that.
And I think you'll find that if you're a person like myself and Dave, if you have a ham in your home, it's not going to last that long.
No,
you're just going to be slicing.
Slice,
and, you know,
slice.
You're bored, you slice some ham. You're hungry, you slice some ham. You're tired, a little bit of ham.
A little bit of ham. A little bit.
Every situation.
Now, here, I'm going to go a little bit against what I normally say, and I'm going to tell you some of my own personal things that I don't like with that style of ham. Now, because American hams have that kind of funk and a little bit of that kind of, I guess it's lipid oxidation. So I don't know what it is, but there's a little bit of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it pairs well with carbonated beverages.
I can agree with that.
Yeah. So, like, I wouldn't do, like, I'm not big on, like, a champagne and country ham tasting. Not.
I mean, if it's like super oxidative champagne, like into the nutty side of things, then it could be nice. But the bubble, just drink sherry. Get some really good sherry and eat a ton of ham.
Yeah, but be aware that you will have a horrible headache the next day. You will have just a rotten... Now, there's been recent evidence that that hangovers merely mimic the symptoms of dehydration. But let me tell you, you will have the actual symptoms of dehydration if what you're doing is pounding nuts, cheese, ham, and cherry. Even though that is delicious,
yeah,
you will have a severe headache. I'm going to tell you this. It is worth it.
Absolutely
I would... I would take that headache any day. But just remember, when you're pounding a lot of ham, hydrate. In professionally, by the way, when you're tasting, should you ever become a country ham tasting professional, like Dr. Norman Marriott was, who used to be the food safety guy at Virginia Tech and who wrote some of the books on how to make country ham, once told me, apple cider. So like not carbonated, not alcoholic, although I like them both carbonated and alcoholic, but apple cider is the palate cleanser of choice when doing country hams. And so also any form of thing like that is a natural pairing with a country ham. So like your apple butters, your apple sauces, your that cooked apple note that you get out of a cider. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so I mean, the situation that I have is I'm going to basically be using it as like a appetizer sort of situation on Thanksgiving for my like family. So I think apples would be kind of like a festive, like seasonal accompaniment.
Yeah, apple. So, hey, you know what you might want to look into that's fun is I like to do if you can get any cooking pears or pears that don't get too messed up when you cook them, what used to be known as Wardens, I love like a mixed apple pear sauce. Like if you look at the old medieval recipes, like charred Warden, it's like these old pear sauces back when people used to do cooking pears a lot. I mean, it's kind of gone by the wayside, but I love a cooked down, like little bit sweet apple pear mix, and that kind of a compote would be delicious with a ham. But like honestly, like I would just sit there chewing on that. I would just be sitting there slicing a piece of ham for myself. What form of slicing are you going to do?
So my plan right now is I have a Yanagiba, like 300 millimeter sushi slicer.
Right.
That's got the chisel grind only on one edge, so I'm going to try to use that. It's a little thick, so I don't know if that's going to work, but I have other slicers to try out as well. But it'll be done by hand, and I don't, you know, just kind of slow. So have you ever been to Zingerman's in Ann Arbor, Michigan?
I have not. I've never been to Ann Arbor.
Killer deli there, and they have a bunch of hams behind the counter that, you know, they slice off the ham on the rack by hand. And so if you want like 3 ounces of ham, it'll take them 20 minutes.
Yeah. They were the first big chain. I know this because I spoke to someone there back in like 04 or 05 when I was doing a lot of my, you know, right after I had done my initial country ham research, and they were the first big place to start serving American hams this way. And, you know, and like literally I would go in whenever I went into a store, I would go into Dean and DeLuca's and I would say, your ham selection is garbage. Why is your ham selection so garbage? And they were like, who are you? Get out of here. You know what I mean? And to my knowledge, even though I never got to visit them, Zingerman's was the first and for a long time, the only establishment that gave a crap about it. So yeah, I'd love to go there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. Anyway, well, thanks for your recommendations.
But hold on a second. Before you go, listen, here's the question I have, because when I say quarter ham, the real question is, which part of the ham are you going to get? Because I don't know whether – I'm assuming he's not breaking the cushion off, and then I'm assuming they're boning it out, and then they're going to cross-cut it. So you're getting some section of a cross-cut of a ham. And
I think that's what it's going to be based on the picture.
Right. And so American style ham serving is a cross cut kind of a phenomenon. But as I'm sure you're aware, the Spanish, and as Cesare Casella will tell you, whose ham is delicious, by the way.
I need to try Cesare's ham.
Yeah.
The best.
Yeah, he uses the old-style hand cutting, and old-style hand cutting is not a cross-cutting technology. They're cutting long ways, and they're doing that, you know, what you would think of as the hand cut that they would do in Spain. Mm-hmm. And so there, it's just a jiggle, 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 jiggle with the slicer and making those, like, kind of long wave. Long, and I used to not like that. Yeah. I have come around to liking them both for different things. So just be aware that the easiest way to get cross-cut style things with a yanagi, if you have an entire piece of ham, is to remove the harder, smaller part of the muscle that's underneath the bone. You'll see it's very much darker, and then that is hard. You put that down, and you can. I would not shave that one with a yanagi. I would use something a little bit with a firmer of a back, and just shave that as you would something harder, because it's usually harder. Then take the cushion section that you have, lay that down flat on the board, and that you can get long, nice draw slices with your nagi. If you trim trim the skin back on the area that you're about to cut, that'll preserve the kind of the rest of it. So trim back just the area on the, and obviously not with your nagi, use something else. Put that down, and then those you can get nice draw slices off. But I would not attempt to slice the entire thing as a piece. And if you have a quarter cut thing, I would not attempt to do the long Spanish style cuts, because you just don't have the length of ham to do it on. All right?
Nice. Thanks for the slicing suggestion. I hadn't even thought about those issues.
Yeah, and that's what we're here for. Cooking. It should be cooking and cutting issues. Here
Instant pot issues. Call in your questions.
Yeah, call in your questions. Anyway, all right.
We got to take a break.
Well, thanks for the advice. Also, thanks for the wonderful experience at Booker & Dax. My drink order was the gin and tonic, the Wanger, and the Thunder Nut.
Ah, the okay, so the Wanger, was that your spec, Jack?
Yeah.
So what was it, for the record?
I'm struggling to recall exact measurements, but it was a mango justino and a Louis Royer cognac with sweet vermouth, yellow chartreuse, lemon, lime, and bitter. So it was tiki style, served tall.
Named after?
The one and only Nick Wong.
Who, for some unknown reason, was called Wang.
Wanger.
Yeah, and it was served with a dance.
Oh,
yeah, the dance. Oh. We got to have Nick Wong on, get him in the booth, have him fly back here just to do the dance at some point.
Nice. All right.
Wanger!
Yes.
Strong.
Take care, guys.
Oh, thank you.
All right. And, gin and tonic specs we can get into later if we need it, but thanks for calling in. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll be right back with more Cooking Issues. Bob's Red Mill has been milling whole grains since 1978. One of the nice things about Bob's Red Mill is it's the only, that I know of, national supplier that's easily available for lots of interesting, hard-to-get grains and other seed products. So, you know, before Bob's Red Mill became widely available, you couldn't go get something like quinoa very easily, or you couldn't go get spelt easily in small quantities. But now you go to any one of the huge number of stores that carry Bob's Red Mill, and you can get smaller amounts of these really interesting, fun things to play with. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast. And we are back. Dave, you say we got a caller on the air?
That's right.
Caller, you're on the air.
Dave, Dan, Seattle.
Hey, how you doing?
So, simple, straight-up question. I can't deal with garbage vacuum sealers anymore. I'm planning to get a real one this Black Friday.
Nice.
So, there's the Polyscience 300.
Which, last time I checked, I haven't checked recently, but last time I checked, is a relabeled mini pack.
Okay. There's a VacMaster. The one that's very price comparable to the Polyscience is the VP210.
Wait, how much is the Polyscience one?
Okay, so on Amazon at this moment, the Polyscience is $800, and the VacMaster VP210 is $760.
Huh. How much is the comparable small mini pack?
A mini pack does not come up on Amazon, so that was one of my questions. Is there a name brand I'm not seeing?
So the professional ones, like a lot of people have multivacs, they're really expensive, and I for years have used mini pack. My question is, what kind of pump does the PolyScience have in it? Is it a
dry pump?
I don't have any personal experience. No one has ever sent me to evaluate. Hint: a dry pump vacuum. I have always been a very very pro oil pump fellow with my vacuum machines, and but I have only really used professional level vacuum machines before, and my only experience with dry pump ones is of the kind of food saver variety, which are not good.
I can certainly back up that part. But then one more quick question here. Have you ever used any of the Weston? I mean, they're truly industrial machines, but they're not chamber vacs. Do you have any experience with those?
I don't. I don't. But back to the VacMaster. I've not used the if the PolyScience is a dry pump one. I haven't used that one. I have not used the VacMaster, but I have spoken to people who like it. In other words, like chefs who've like they sent one to the French Culinary after I'd stopped teaching their low temperature sous vide class, and Hervé Malavert, who was teaching it with me before I left, says that he thinks it's fine. He thinks it's okay to work with. I have not used it, and I've never spoken to anyone in depth other than him, who has a lot of experience with real like oil pump based chamber vacuums so it's hard for me to make a judgment. Now, typically an oil pump machine is going to clock in at $1,500 minimum, you know what I mean? And so, you know, it's twice as much money. So the question is it twice as good? What are you trying to do with it? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is it that you want it to, first of all, what is it that you want it to do? Right.
Well, I mean, I feel a lot of different stuff, but the thing that just makes me climb the walls is when I make sausage and I'm trying to seal it in 4-ounce packages for like, to put on things on like pizza and pasta.
Right.
So I want relatively small units, and I wind up with like 40 of them. And the cheapo models, I get seal 15 quickly, and then they start overheating, and then it takes eons to get it finished, and you've got sausage sitting there getting warm.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oil-based pumps, the more you run them, the better they are. Literally, the more you run an oil-based pump, the better it gets at sucking a vacuum, because the pump heats up, and as it heats up, it gets better and better because it gets better at rejecting moisture that's in it. So it's just like, And I'm assuming what's happening in also with the overheating is as liquids get sucked into a dry pump, liquids actually inside the diaphragm area don't get ejected well enough, and so you reduce your pumping action there, and you have to run it, even one of those things, you have to run for a long time to re-dry out the inside of the pump to get like decent fast vacuum levels again. This is my experience with dry pumps and rotary evaporators, which I have a lot of experience with dry pumps and rotary evaporator situations. But those dry pumps also have such a lower CFM rating than the oil-based pumps do. Those oil-based pumps just rip and rip and rip. And so, like, if you're going to spend $800, I mean, I'm not telling you to go buy, but here's the other thing, right? If you get a decent, like, mid-level chamber vac, and this is the one thing that I think people don't invest in. I've said it back when I used to advise professionals on this constantly, get a machine with two seal bars. And everyone's like, oh, the second seal bar takes up so much space in my chamber vac. And I'm like, you can take the seal bar out when you're not using it so that it's not taking up room in your machine. But especially if you're doing portion packs, imagine if you could seal two packages every time you close the lid. How much better would your life be if you could seal things twice as quickly?
Oh, I see what you're saying. So some of them you can literally seal like two relatively small bags at once.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. So you have like you get a machine. Yeah, right. You get a machine that has a seal bar in the front, a seal bar in the back. It's an add-on usually. It doesn't usually cost that much extra. And then when you need the extra space in your machine, you just pull the bar out of the back, and you're fine. You know, it doesn't stop you from bagging soups if you want. You know, some of the machines, like the mini pack, the one that I use, you can also you can reverse it so you can have a super long bag outside of the chamber if you were bagging, let's say, a giant striper that you were going to cook or something like that, or you know, if you're out in Seattle, whatever in the hell, salmon, whatever they have out there.
Dave, we got to wrap up. Final thoughts.
Oh man. All right. Anyway, let us know what you choose. Next week we're going to have a long cooking issues, right, Dave, or not for Thanksgiving?
That's what I hear. Yeah. Okay. Our Thanksgiving gift to you.
Okay, Nick wrote in and wants to know when the Spinzalls are going to be available on Amazon. Hopefully by Black Friday, Spinzalls will be on Amazon. We're working on it. They're flying into the country now, but you never know. We have a bartender question, Dan from Chicago, about Christmas cocktails. Since it's for Christmas, we'll do it next time. I'll tell you what I did on the way out, Jack. See what you think. By the way, do you have the spec for the Wanger? Do you want to give it to him?
Yeah, I do have that spec. It's, well, if you have a Spinzall, you're going to need to get a bottle of Louis Royer cognac and do 150 grams of dried mangoes blended into the cognac, spun out to make the mango justino that we used. And then it's a 1/2 ounce of yellow chartreuse, 1/2 ounce of pineapple syrup, which is just 1-to-1 pineapple juice and sugar, 1/4 ounce of Carpano Antica, and 3/8 of an ounce of lime juice, and give that a whip and put it on crushed ice in a highball, top it with Ango.
All right.
Yeah.
And so, but if you guys want more specs, we're going to do our Booker and Dax reunion episode, or if you want Jack to come back on, let us know, do a request. Maybe he'll, out of the goodness of his heart, come back in. Here's what I did on the way out. I was using a pressure washer. So like, you know how like you have things that don't fit in your sink, like sheet pans and stuff like this? I said, what if I use a pressure washer outside, because I had access to one, to clean all my stuff? So here's the thing.
Oh, geez.
On sheet pans, mm-hmm. Great. I didn't have access to warm water. I'm going to do a warm water pressure washer outside with a hose in a couple of weeks. Hopefully, I'll see how that is. But fantastic on the sheet trays. Do not attempt on your VitaPrep container. I was like, VitaPrep container, it's kind of a pain. The sink's full of stuff, so do not attempt. And on big stainless steel bowls, like big salad bowls, like that don't fit in your sink, do not attempt. But anyway, I'm going to work on pressure washing as a aware washing technique, and I'll get back to you with more information on cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.